The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. And I don't know if you were listening to the conversation that I was having with Howard Saxteen. One of the stories, in fact, that I wanted to talk to you about is that Tel Aviv University and the Technion have both been included on the list of the world's top 100 universities to have been granted U.S. utilities patents in 2018.
Boker Tov to the two Howards. I hope you guys are doing well. I have been listening into the conversation and also thinking about this whole entrepreneurship and the innovation that goes on in Israel. And I think it's fantastic that both the Technion and Tel Aviv University have been named in the top 100 universities around the world to have been granted these utility patents. And in fact, Tel Aviv University is 66th top university on that list after registering no fewer than 37 utility patents in the US through its technology transfer arm. And the Technion has actually registered something similar to that 32 patents. So all in all, I think that Israeli universities are doing well. Of course, the leading university around the world that has is on top of this list of the registration of these patents is in fact the University of California with 526 utility patents. So I think that Israeli universities have still got a long way to go to reach that sort of level. But I think we have to take all of this into proportion because you see the University of California is a massive institution with different campuses around the United States, and we can hardly compare that to the Technion and to Tel Aviv University. So I think on a per capita basis, certainly the Israeli universities do well. And, you know, that sort of ties in a little bit to another story that caught my eye today, which is the fact that there's also been a breakthrough in the research in Parkinson's, and that Tel Aviv University has unveiled this new method for detecting and potentially treating, delaying the onset of Parkinson's. And this has just been announced in the last day or so. They've been focusing on these proteins that aggregate in the human brain, which ultimately bring on the effects of Parkinson's. And by the time someone shows any symptoms of Parkinson's, unfortunately by that stage it's often too late because the proteins have aggregated to such a degree that it's very, very difficult to treat them. And so therefore the treatment is really for the effects, the consequential effects that happen from Parkinson's rather than going to the root cause of the problem. So I think that this is just another innovation along with an announcement that was made, I think last week by the Sheba Medical Center, that they've discovered a potential treatment for pancreatic cancer, which apparently is the fourth leading cause of cancer death around the world. So lots and lots of innovation, and particularly in the medical side. But it's wonderful to see these universities, these Israeli universities, being so innovative, and the students who are coming out of there actually registering these patents and also becoming real entrepreneurs. And there's also a measure for the entrepreneurial spirit amongst university graduates, how many entrepreneurs are actually produced. And apparently there was this study that was carried out, and three Israeli universities were ranked amongst the world leaders in producing successful serial entrepreneurs, people who've come out of the university, have managed to raise money, venture capital funding for their ventures. The Tel Aviv University was eighth on the list, the Technion 14th, and Jerusalem's Hebrew University 35 amongst the top universities around the world. So I think that that's also a great indication of what success is happening in Israel's general innovation, and in particular in the universities.
Anthony, a while back, I don't know if you've heard further, there was this very dramatic announcement. It was probably about half a year ago about this Israeli company that was going to basically cure cancer like it cured, a common cold. Have we heard anything from them? I mean, I know that many of us, you included, was a little suspicious around this kind of dramatic announcement, but has there been any follow-up on that story?
So I haven't seen much follow-up. I mean, this what you're talking about, Howard, was this announcement that came back in January from a Nes Ziona company that claimed that, you know, there was this cure for cancer. We haven't heard very much since then, but there were certainly very, very brave claims that were being made at that stage. Some people felt that they were even a little bit rash in terms of, you know, making such claims. So we haven't heard very much since then, but I'm guessing we'll probably hear a little bit more about it in due course. I mean, there are lots and lots of stories coming out about, Israeli research that's being done in various fields. I mean, we spoke about Parkinson's and we spoke about pancreatic cancer and we've spoken about other things, that Israeli institutions and research centers are focusing on. So, I think we'll have to wait and see whether there's any validity to this very, very wild claim that a cure for cancer has been found.
It's actually funny, and science says, Howie, you can't cure common cold, so your analogy is actually quite good. As I was saying the common cold, I thought, you know, one of our smart listeners is going to realize that actually you can't cure the cold. We've just got to wait for it to pass, for the virus to pass. So well done in picking that up. Of course, a very, very sad day yesterday in Israel, Anthony. And it's a story we should have started with, but because Howard and I were chatting about other issues, we went on to that. Nachama Rivlin, wife of Israel's President Reuven Rivlin, died yesterday, a day before what would have been her 74th birthday. What's been the reaction to her passing?
Well, what strikes me about this story is that Nachama Rivlin has always been the power behind the politician, which has been Ruby Rivlin. And we've kind of in the public eye always seen her like that, very, very supportive. Their relationship was always being held up as such a fantastic relationship, a loving relationship between two people who have completely opposing political views. There was nothing that Ruby Rivlin believed in which Nachama necessarily supported. She had a completely different political view on the world.
I didn't know
but
that.
Her focus... Her focus was really on other things. She was very much focused on women's rights and on social issues. You know, she was very much well known for fighting for those who were slightly disabled and who needed a voice to fight for. She was someone who was an academic and worked in Jerusalem as an academic for many, many years until she retired about 10 years ago. And, you know, all of a sudden now that unfortunately she's passed away, and we do know and we were following the fact that she had suffered with pulmonary fibrosis for many, many years. And she even a few months ago underwent a lung transplant. And I remember we discussed that, but unfortunately she never really recovered from that. But now that she's passed away, the stories about her are really coming to light. And, you know, unfortunately that is a classic situation that we often find, that we don't necessarily recognize people fully while they're still living. And all of a sudden when they pass away, so many interesting stories and so many fascinating connections come to light. And that's exactly what's happened with Nachama. So Israel certainly mourns the loss of the First Lady. She was very, very supportive of her husband throughout his political career, and their relationship was something to really be people felt jealous of the fact that they had such a close relationship, and there was such support between the two of them. She will have the people will have the opportunity to pay their respects to her today. Her coffin will lie in state effectively at the Jerusalem Theatre today before the funeral that will take place later on this afternoon, early evening, at Har Herzl, Mount Herzl, the plot that is reserved for state leaders. That is where she will be buried. So we certainly are mourning her. You know, the contribution that she made both from her own, in her own right, towards the rights of people who perhaps are less advantaged than we are, and also in the way that she supported her husband, Ruby Rivlin. He was a politician, former Knesset speaker, and of course now president of Israel, and the fact that she supported all of his endeavors so that he could make his contribution to the state of Israel.
Fascinating. Where did they oppose each other politically? When you say that they were, that they didn't really agree on political stances.
Well, from what I can gather and what I've read and heard about her in particular, she seemed to hold a very left-wing view on things in general, where, of course, we know that Ruby Rivlin, who's grown up in the Likud and really supported the Likud's point of view all of his political life, really holds quite a right-wing view, and some people would even say quite an extreme right-wing view on things, even though as president, obviously, he's had to temper that a little bit in the interests of representing the office of the president rather than coming in as a politician. But we understand, well, I understand from what I've heard, is that she had a very kind of social left-wing view on the world, and I'm not quite sure exactly how that presented itself on particular issues relating to the state of Israel and how she would have viewed, I don't know, you know, issues of security and issues of peace talks and issues like that. I'm not quite sure exactly what her views were. And I rather suspect that she kept them mostly to herself, because obviously with her husband being such a high-ranking politician and so active in the political sphere, it would have looked a bit strange if she would have come out opposing all of the things that he'd been fighting for all of his life. But certainly people from across the political spectrum have come out issuing their condolences to the Rivlin family, and of course leaders from around the world issuing their condolences to the State of Israel upon the loss of the First Lady.
Right, and that of course, that funeral will take place later today. Israel's destroyed the last of the Hezbollah tunnels under the Lebanese border. Give us some more information around this.
Well, we know that these tunnels were discovered during the operation that took place late last year and earlier this year, and now there were some reports of further tunnels having been discovered, and even very, very substantial size tunnels having been discovered. But the latest and the last tunnel that has now been destroyed, that was discovered in Operation Northern Shield, was reported to the press on Monday. Apparently, this was a tunnel that was almost a mile long that stretched underneath the Israel-Lebanon border, and it was 22 stories deep. So this was something that was dug right deep under the Israeli-Lebanese border, and the plan was obviously to use it as an attack tunnel in the event that Hezbollah wanted to get access to Israel from within Israel rather than having to rely upon crossing the border. So the tunnel was rigged with electrical wiring, and it had fuse boxes, and it had communications equipment. And the way that the army has been dealing with these tunnels that were discovered under the Lebanese border is that they've actually been filling them with concrete in order to disable them. So they're not going through the process of, let's say, exploding them in order to try to destroy them, but they've actually been filling them with this concrete, which apparently is kind of the last possible thing that anybody would be able to do there, because they wouldn't be able to move that concrete or dig into it or reuse that particular area or that tunnel for the same purpose. So some of these tunnels are quite astonishing when we see the amount of effort and the amount of money and work that's gone into building them, and how long it would have taken to build such a tunnel. And when you think about going down underground 22 stories, it's quite amazing. So, you know, the reports that had been coming out of the past few years of people who lived in that area feeling movement under the ground and suspecting that things were going on underground were obviously justified. And now that the Israelis claim to have discovered all of these tunnels, some of them stretching quite some distance into Israel and having destroyed them, people in the north will hopefully feel a little bit safer. But it does show the ingenuity, and it does show how much effort goes into trying to break into Israel, and how much threat Israel is coming from, not only above ground, but indeed underneath as well.
Fascinating. I wonder if this type of thing builds confidence or makes people more nervous. I think if I was living there, I would worry that, what if Israel doesn't find a new tunnel? Because there certainly doesn't seem to be an intention to stop it.
Well, I think that you're right. I mean, there are two sides to this particular story. On the one side, the question is why it took so long for these tunnels to be discovered, and why they weren't stopped right in their tracks while they were being constructed, why it took, you know, so many years during which time these tunnels were actually fully developed and fully equipped with all kinds of communications and electrical equipment. How did the Israeli security allow that to take place? And I think that the fact that that was allowed to happen gives an element of insecurity to the people living there, saying, well, if that's what we missed the last time, what could we be missing the next time? On the other hand, now that these tunnels have been destroyed, I think people are feeling a little bit safer. But obviously, the army has to show people living in the north, and indeed all citizens of Israel, that they will detect this a little bit sooner in the future, and that this threat will not be allowed to exist as long as it did the last time.
Absolutely, and certainly it's a story that unfortunately doesn't end here. Anthony Reich, this report ends here. We'll see you same time, same place tomorrow. Thank you, as always. We'll chat to you on Thursday.